This is Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
The Malaysian Airlines plane traveling from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur with 298 people on board was shot down yesterday in Ukraine near the Russian border. News agencies report that all 298 people died in the crash, and at least one American is believed to be among the dead.
While Ukraine and Russia both blamed each other, President Obama a few hours ago announced that the U.S. has concluded the jet was brought down by a surface-to-air missile launched from insurgent-held territory in eastern Ukraine.
William Pomeranz joins us now. He is deputy director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. And William Pomeranz, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure.
I want to start out and with your understanding of what the latest news we have on this is. This is one of those stories that has a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving parts that aren't fully fleshed out yet. We really don't know what's happening in a lot of cases.
Yeah, obviously the crucial issue is trying to determine where the missile that brought down this plane was fired from. And I think you heard both with Ambassador Powers in the UN and with President Obama that at least the U.S. intelligence is strongly indicating that it was fired from rebel-held territory. The Russians, of course, deny this and have argued that in many ways, in fact, in all ways, this is a problem that emanates from Kiev and from the Ukrainian government. So we have the controversy as to where the missile was fired from, and we'll soon have the controversy of what is actually left on the ground to investigate, because obviously the Ukrainian militias have had an opportunity to go through, the pro-Russian Ukrainian pro-Russian militias have had a chance to get sift through the remains of the plane, and as you just mentioned, we're not welcoming to foreign investigators when they arrived.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot to figure out in all of that. One of the questions I have, is, and the first thing I thought when I heard that this had happened yesterday, was who would do this intentionally? And as we learn more about this, it seems as though it may not have been intentional in terms of shooting down an airliner with passengers on it.
I think that is correct. I think there has been some captured exchanges from the Russian separatists or the people in eastern Ukraine. Clearly, they thought that they were shooting at a Ukrainian transport plane. I don't think that you will find that it turns out that it was that the separatists intentionally fired at a commercial airliner. But it shows the problem when these separatists are armed with the latest technology and don't really have the ability to think through all their actions before taking them.
And let's talk a little bit about that technology, the missiles that apparently, allegedly, are being linked back to Russia, and the fact that they are technically advanced and that it does take some sophisticated knowledge to be able to operate them, knowledge that the separatist rebels apparently would not be likely to have. I mean, it's all so interesting and sketchy as we try to trace all this stuff back. But that's what people are trying to do here, trace it all back and connect those dots.
Exactly right. And you're correct. It's going to be very difficult to try to determine the origins of this missile. But it is apparently a very sophisticated piece of technology. It doesn't appear to be something that the Ukrainian government had access to prior to this event. And so the suspicions continue to point to the separatists. But as you've mentioned, we are still in the phase of gathering facts. And we have to be careful to understand kind of the nature of the dispute. But at least according to the early statements that have been put forward by the United States, suspicion and circumstantial evidence now point to the separatists in eastern Ukraine.
And really, no matter which way the facts come out on this, it will put Vladimir Putin in a very interesting position.
President Putin is very much on the defensive now. He has to somehow either—he will continue to essentially blame the Ukrainian government, as occurred in the Security Council today, that this is all the fault of Ukraine and its inability to control its own borders and its people, and will trace back to the events of the Euromaidan. But Putin faces a very difficult international climate. The day before this disaster, the U.S. introduced a new round of sanctions that were directed toward very prominent energy and arms companies in Russia. The EU has promised to introduce more sanctions at the end of this month, as well as put limits on the ability of some European banking institutions to provide loans to Russia. So Russia increasingly is isolated as a result of this, and I think is also beginning to feel the consequences of the sanctions that have been put into place.
Yeah, you talk about those sanctions, the isolating effect, this particular airline disaster, and Vladimir Putin on the defensive is not something we've seen a lot of in the past, is it?
No, we haven't seen it in the past, and I think it's fair to say that he doesn't like being on the defensive, and his general characteristics is that when pushed into the corner, he will find a way to go back on the offensive as fast as possible. So I think that we should anticipate that Russia will look to find ways to get out of this corner, and it will continue to do so by trying to cast to spread a wider circle, as it were, of blame.
And we can't forget about the United States in all of this. We have heard from President Obama. You mentioned Ambassador Powers a few minutes ago. This is another delicate issue for the president. What kind of line does he have to walk in this?
Well, it's very interesting because President Obama has been faulted for drawing red lines in various instances around the world and not following up on them. But what I think he's done in this particular instance is not just draw a red line, but a gray line. And the gray line essentially says that Russia has to do something to address the tensions in eastern Ukraine. And if it doesn't do something, the level of sanctions will be increased. And the problem here for Russia is that it is a gray line, and it does and is unclear when that line is crossed. So that the new round of sanctions occurred without a direct provocation, but simply out of frustration that Russia, from President Obama's perspective, simply hadn't done enough to address the problems in eastern Ukraine. Now we have a new act of tragedy that no doubt will also potentially serve as a catalyst for new sanctions if indeed Russia decides not to address the U.S. concerns and begin to ease tensions in eastern Ukraine.
And if, you know, and President Obama, of course, criticized on his action or inaction on the red line, the gray line is gray, as you say. So what options does that leave the U.S. following this? I'm getting the sense that I don't hear a lot of good ones out there.
Well, the options are essentially the U.S. from the very beginning has decided that the military option is not on the table in the sense that the U.S. is not in a position to intervene militarily in eastern Ukraine, and there is no expectation that that is about to happen. So what I think you will see is simply a increase in the level of sanctions. The most recent round of sanctions, as I mentioned, hurt the abilities of certain Russian companies to obtain long-term financing, but it doesn't necessarily prohibit U.S. companies from conducting business with them. I think the next round of sanctions will potentially do that. And I think the one round of sanctions that Russians fear the most is kind of severe sectoral sanctions that would limit Russia's ability to gain access to international financial markets and would put limits on the transfer of advanced technology to Russia.
And, you know, we've been having this discussion about this airliner crash in Ukraine. We haven't even mentioned what Ukraine needs to do in all of this. So far, you know, they've been saying it's not been their military. There's some reason to believe them, but we don't know. Where does this leave Ukraine?
Well, Ukraine is obviously facing a huge number of severe challenges. It has to deal with major political reforms, constitutional reforms, and it also has an economy that is a basket case. So the added military tension and problem of succession in eastern Ukraine is just another obstacle for Ukrainian statehood. But one has to say that even though it faces many challenges, one of the consequences of what has occurred in eastern Ukraine and President Putin's strategy is in that many ways Ukraine is a much more united country today than it was 6 months ago. President Putin has done a lot, as it were, to help create a Ukrainian state, a more unified Ukrainian state, in light of the various actions that have occurred in eastern Ukraine and in Crimea.
We're going to be continuing our conversation about the implications for Russia-Ukraine relations and the U.S.'s role, of course, in all of this following the downing of the passenger jet that was shot down over eastern Ukraine yesterday. William Pomeranz is with us from the Woodrow Wilson Center.
And we'd like to hear from you. What would you like to see the American reaction be? What would be your advice for President Obama? What options are open to the U.S.? And what are your thoughts on this ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking now about the Malaysia Airlines jet that was shot down over eastern Ukraine yesterday and what it means for the wider conflict in the region. And you can join the conversation. How do you think this event will affect the Russia-Ukraine conflict? What, if anything, should the United States do in response? How would you like to see President Obama, the United States, and European allies respond to the situation? You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org.
William Pomeranz is with us now, the Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. And before the news, we were talking a little bit about the various factions here. We also haven't mentioned the separatist rebels and how they will be impacted by this. Of course, allegations are that Russia has been funneling weapons and support to the separatists. And now, of course, President Putin under pressure to, if that exists, to pull that back. If that support is pulled out, then what?
Well, if the support, if Russian support were to be pulled back, then it is unlikely that these groups would be able to maintain their resistance to the Ukrainian Central Forces, and they would most likely collapse. That being said, if indeed Putin decides to pull back and not to support these Russian separatists, then there will be political consequences for Putin inside Russia. Putin's position is not really under threat, but there are plenty of people who believe that he's not giving enough support to the separatists in eastern Ukraine. And I think that he would be accused, essentially, of abandoning the separatists and the pro-Russian troops in eastern Ukraine, and would face some political headwinds as a result of it. The nationalists in Russia are essentially saying that Putin has not done enough to support the separatists and militias in eastern Ukraine, and Putin's decision to pull back, if he were to take that, would focus criticism on Putin.
So as we look at all of these various factions and these various situations developing around the world, and then we kind of look at it in the context of this airliner crash yesterday, this airliner being shot down, would we be having this discussion today? You know, if this event hadn't have happened, would everything be as crystallized as it appears to be right now, or would it be the same and just happening but nobody talking about it?
In terms of the situation in Ukraine?
Yeah.
No, I think there is the situation in Ukraine had reached a certain level of, I wouldn't call it equilibrium, but of people understood where the conflict was. I think that equilibrium changed on Wednesday when President Obama introduced a new round of sanctions, because I think that did draw focus again to this conflict, and it essentially said that President Obama was not simply going to let the prevailing status quo remain, and that he was going to hold Russia accountable. And I think what we're going to see, and we saw this before and we'll see it increasingly, is that the U.S. will try to increase the pressure on Russia through sanctions to somehow convince Putin that he needs to change course. Whether he does so or not is still too very difficult to predict.
Yeah, and you also mentioned earlier that, you know, his M.O. would be to go on the offensive in some way. Would that be something that would be likely to happen soon, or something that he would, or he might be forced to make it sooner than he would like, or would he be more likely to wait and kind of do it at his own time, at his own pace?
When I said offensive, I don't think that, at least at the present time, Russia is thinking about a military offensive.
No, I knew that.
I think by offensive, I mean he will use various international forum
right.
to blame Ukraine and blame the United States for everything that has occurred in eastern Ukraine, including the downing of this plane. I think that that what I expect to happen, if indeed the pressure, if the evidence points increasingly toward the separatists who are armed by Russia, is that Russia will deny responsibility, and it will blame the Ukrainians for what has occurred, both in the shooting and the continued instability in eastern Ukraine.
Now, we obviously have a long way to go before we know what really happened to that plane and what you know, where a missile might have come from. How should this investigation proceed so that people can have some kind of trust that it is on the up and up, and that it is, whatever the results of this turn out to be, that people can count on that? Or is it going to be something where years from now we're still going to be debating about, did that really happen or did somebody else do it?
Well, the proper international institution and international investigators have to be given access to this crash site. And as we learned today, that has not happened so far. And it's most likely that the eastern Ukrainian separatists or whatever have already gone through the crash site and gone through whatever kind of initial information or evidence that might be there to pick up. So there is a question as to what extent the crash site has already been, as it were, contaminated by the local officials. It's also unclear, for example, where the black boxes are. It has been reported that the separatists have found the black boxes, and it had also been mentioned that they had sent them to Moscow. Now, maybe that is not the case, but obviously an independent international investigation of this incident is the only thing that would give any sort of semblance of an answer that is acceptable to the various parties.
And how likely is that to happen? How likely is it that we'll have something independent that follows through, that people can trust?
I think it is possible, but I think that even at this, the site itself has already been gone through by the separatists. So we have to wait and see to what extent all the information can be gathered in order to come up with some sort of reasonably conclusive report. That is something that that the investigators will be in a position to determine once they get unlimited and complete access to the crash site.
So as that investigation goes on, we've talked about what the U.S.'s role should be. What about the European Union? What about other parts of the world weighing in on this? What should their role be, and how should that role be publicized? Should they take to their bully pulpits and publicize it, or should this just be something that's taken care of through diplomatic channels?
Well, I think the Europeans will try to have a coordinated response. That being the case, obviously, the Dutch are the most aggrieved party in this tragedy, since so many of the people killed were from the Netherlands. So I think it will strain Russia's relations with individual countries within the EU. I don't yet have a full we don't really yet know if the EU will provide a unified response and increase the sanctions, and essentially whether this incident really ruptures the consensus that somehow the trade contacts between Russia and the EU have to be maintained at the current levels. It might just this could potentially cause some sort of disruption. As for the rest of the world, I don't anticipate them getting heavily involved. Putin, interestingly, has tried to rally the BRICS around the problem of U.S. sanctions, but I don't think that Russia's fellow members of this economic union really want to be engaged in such a political issue.
So for people who are following this, what should we be paying particular attention to in terms of news coverage over the next day or weeks or two?
I think we have to pay close attention as to whether an investigation takes place and whether it's impartial. I also think we have to pay attention to how both the United States and the EU respond and whether the downing of this plane serves as a catalyst to increase the level of sanctions, and indeed whether they are increased to a level of sectoral sanctions, which goes after specific sectors of the Russian economy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there is that possibility that it could serve that function as a catalyst for something, or depending on what happens, it could just sort of fade into another headline that we dimly remember a year from now.
Well, I think that is a possibility, and obviously tragedies like this often do tend to fade into the headlines, fade into the past, and it's unclear from a news standpoint whether this particular incident will continue to dominate the news cycles or whether events in the Middle East will overshadow what has occurred in eastern Ukraine and the downing of this jet. These incidents can serve as a catalyst. The shooting down of the Korean airliner in the 1980s by the Soviet Union led to a rupture of relations between the United States and the Soviet Union for 2-3 years. We'll just have to wait and see whether this event serves as a similar disruption between U.S.-Russian relations.
Well, William, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with William Pomeraz. He is Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute of the Woodrow Wilson Center.